All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton, week 8 edition of the show, as we sit here on the heels of a very, very tough defeat on Monday Night Football to the Baltimore Ravens. A short week, and not just a short week for any old game, a gigantic game this Sunday at 1 p.m. at Raymond James Stadium. A huge division game, season implications as the Atlanta Falcons come to town. And what will be the throwback day, they'll be wearing the orange uniforms, and so much more going on. So thank you for joining us here on this unfortunate morning after the morning after. I'm recording this on Wednesday midday, so a little bit earlier in the week. I couldn't wait to get the microphone out after Monday night. And of course, we're all bummed out. You know, that was a lot of levels. We're going to talk about all of them. A performance that I said this on Twitter. And, you know, sometimes I say things during the game that I don't mean. Everybody's always emotional. I always talk about a cool-off period afterward before you make bold proclamations. So my whole timeline from Monday night is a lot of frustration, as many of you. You can follow me on Twitter, at Bobby Game Day, by the way. But here's what I said after the game. I'm reading this verbatim, and I haven't taken this tweet down. I don't like when people use knee-jerk hyperbole due to recency bias. You know, whatever the latest thing was is either the greatest or the worst thing ever. But all told, this is the single most disastrous regular season football game I've ever seen the Buccaneers play. So that was Monday night, like in the immediate aftermath. You always want to wait before you say stuff like that. You always want to wait, and like I said, the cool-off period matters. Nothing, no matter how good or bad it is, but especially in how bad it is, seems as bad the morning after, if you can just get a little sleep. Almost nothing. I'm talking about stuff like sports, not real life stuff. You know, oh, my favorite team lost or whatever, that type of thing. But now that it's been 36 hours or so since the end of the football game, as of this sitting, I read that tweet back, kind of still feel that way. Wow, that was bad. Like, if we all sat down at a conference table, like at a meeting, like when you work for a company that has a boardroom or a conference room, or we're having a meeting, let's come up with ideas. Let's bounce ideas around the room. Everybody, hey, Mike, go. Tina, go. You know, everybody give me their ideas. Let's draw up the worst possible things that could happen. Like, how can we make this the, you know, I was so excited before Monday Night Football, just like always. Everybody was excited. So let's see what hypothetically would be the worst possible outcome. So if we did that and went around the room, you know, one person may at their end of the table may have said, hey, how about the defense gets exposed, not just for having a bad night, but for being an absolutely broken unit that makes you feel as if this team can't compete deep into November, let alone deep into January, due to its deficiencies. Okay, Mike, good call. That's one. Tina, hey, how about Chris Godwin in the middle of one of his best seasons ever when we need him the most? How about we have him get hurt after the game's already over and nothing that he's doing matters anyway? Ooh, Tina, good one. We can't put both of Mike, I like your idea. Tina, I like your idea. I don't think we can put them both in the same game. That just simply wouldn't be possible, right? But I like them both. Hey, there's Tony over there. Tony, you got your hand raised. Yeah, I also think we should play Mike Evans on a bad hamstring, even though he's unable to run at full speed, then throw a ball just out in front of him that he has to accelerate into fifth gear for and have him pop the hamstring and drop a touchdown pass at the same time, leading to us then throwing an end zone pick that turns the entire tide of the game later on. Ooh, Tony, good idea. Write that one down. I'll tell my secretary. Write that one down. I like what Tony just said. May have to save that one for another week. We've already got too many ideas for this week. You know, this is, we're getting a little bit crowded here, and let's be honest, none of those three things can all happen at the same time. Probably even two of them can't happen at the same time. But great ideas, everybody. We'll adjourn the meeting for now. No, all those things happen on Monday night. Like, it was the worst case scenario piled on top of the worst case scenario. I talked about last week how, hey, Ravens are a good team. I mean, you're not going to win every game. I'm never going to be okay with the Bucs losing. But I told you, the big one, the really important one is Atlanta. We've got to have the Atlanta game. If you're going to lose, losing the AFC teams is the least harmful to your chances. They don't factor into any tiebreakers. No other team in your conference or division gets a win. It's the least, and again, no loss is good. You don't ever want to lose. You only get 17 games. You can't just give away losses. But if you're going to lose, hey, Baltimore's really good. This is a tough one. You lose this, you come back and beat Atlanta, fine. I can live with the loss. But what shook me to my core on Monday night wasn't just, hey, we had a bad game, we lost. This defense is bad. Like, it's not even like, hey, they had a bad game. They are bad right now. They don't have the pass rush they need. And when the pass rush doesn't get home, this zone defense gets absolutely roasted. And, you know, even down, I always say this, I'm never going to pretend I know more than the coaches. I'm never going to pretend that. These guys have forgotten more about football in the last 20 minutes than I'll ever know in my life, okay? But even when I coach my son's flag football team in the Under Armour, you know, under the lights, flag football, South Tampa, you know, when I coach his team, we run some zone defenses. And we always tell them, you know, zone defenses, you have an area instead of a person. Everybody knows that. But we still cover people. We don't cover grass. Like, we don't just stand in our area with our arms kind of out, like, okay, this is my area. We still cover people. And watching the Bucs defense get absolutely taken apart over and over and over again, the middle of the field was an absolute amusement park for the Baltimore Ravens on Monday night. And watching that over and over again, it's just guys covering grass. Like, receivers are running into space, into the holes in the zone. Nobody's actually covering anybody. Everybody's just kind of standing in their spot. And it happens over and over and over again, even when it seems like the defense is being run the way it's designed, let alone all the times these guys are in the wrong place, like the Mark Andrews touchdown, the first touchdown, when we have two guys run to the flat and nobody covers hook curl, and Andrews just turns around and catches a ball and there's nobody there. Stuff like that, at least you say, oh, they blew an assignment. If you were watching the Manning cast, Peyton and Eli broke that down, and Peyton said, well, you know, that's a defensive lineman being asked to drop into zone coverage. It's not what they're paid to do, and sometimes if you don't practice it hard enough, they don't remember, whatever. Even when the defense looks like they're doing what they're supposed to do, just covering blades of grass, not actually covering people, wide open holes. Again, Lamar Jackson's really good. I'm never going to try and say, oh, well, we made him look good. No, he's good, okay? But that was also, and I bet you if you asked him, he'd tell you this himself. All those guys would. That was the easiest night they've had. I mean, the Bucs made the Ravens' life easy, okay? And it's become something that is more than just a bad game. It's become a trend. 500 yards of offense against Atlanta 2 weeks ago. Another 500 yards on Monday night. And there are question marks on the defense that you've got to worry about. Now, I'm not saying this is who they are. That was a bad game. I'm just saying it wasn't just a bad game. So I think of all the things that happened Monday night, that's what worries me the most, because I could live with a loss. I could live with it not being your night. Whatever, you bounce back. Obviously, the injuries are a separate thing we're going to talk about in a minute. But foundationally, at our core, I am now heavily concerned, more than I was even after the Atlanta game 2 weeks ago, that we are not defensively competent enough to go the places that the Bucs want to go to be playing with the teams they're going to have to play against to get to those places. I'm worried about that, because this defense is bad right now. The offense, let's talk about the offense for a second. The offense, I thought, had a really good night outside of Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield had a very poor game. He'll be the first one to tell you those happen. The end zone pick absolutely was just like sticking a knife directly into your back of your own team. It happens, okay? But besides Mayfield, I thought the offense was really good. The offensive line did a great job in pass protection. I thought even when there were issues, I thought Mayfield ran himself into some sacks more than anything. And he's run himself out of plenty more. I'm not ripping Mayfield. You're allowed to have a bad. I call it earning your mistakes. He's earned his mistakes. Of course, we want everybody to be their best all the time. But a guy like Mayfield, he's done plenty. It wasn't his night. Fine. Offensive line looked good. Rashad White coming back. Now they had three running backs. All three looked good, including White, who was a very solid. And the receivers, I mean, again, I before everything that happened, I have no qualms with the offense. Mayfield hurt the offense. He'll be the first one to tell you that. But there's not a systemic issue with the offense. That's my point. That was just a bad night. Whereas the defense, there's a systemic issue right now. And I'm not sure how easily that can be fixed. And I'm very worried about it. So then you throw in what we just talked about on top of that. Mike Evans, first of all, goes out and gets his 100th touchdown catch. He had 100 touchdowns, but one of them was a running play. Now he got the 100th catch early in the game. But even then, you could tell he wasn't right. And guys know, it's hard to talk about this stuff from a third party. I'm sitting here in my kitchen doing a podcast. But I do know something about soft tissue injuries. I'm not comparing myself to Mike Evans, okay? But let me tell you something right now. I know how Mike Evans felt on Monday night because I'm 44. I play Ultimate Frisbee. I've been playing Ultimate Frisbee, which is an incredibly taxing game on your legs. Non-contact. But I've played every Sunday for 20-plus years. You can play in the game with me. We play Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. Email me at bobbygameday@yahoo.com if you want to play with us. But anyway, my point is, as I've gotten a little older, muscle pulls have started happening more. I never used to pull any muscles. You might be sore, your legs are sore from playing or something like that. But all these little tweaks, and it's never just an outright yank. Like sometimes I'll tweak my hammy or I'll tweak a calf muscle and I feel it and it doesn't outright pop, so I'm still kind of playing and I'm running around like pretty okay, but then there's that one disc in the air, and Mike Evans, that one ball in the air that's a little bit out in front of you, and you got to turn it on to fifth gear. Because they're sprinting, but then they're sprinting. And you all know, if anybody who's ever played a sport probably knows what I mean. Like, you can be running, and then there's a ball out of your reach a little bit, it's still in the air, and you might think you're sprinting, and all of a sudden, you hit the gas pedal, and then you go into that fifth gear. So, and then it just pops. Like, it's just gone. I know that I've done that before, okay? And a lot of you probably have, too. So that's what happened. Mike Evans was like getting by. He was getting by. And you might say, well, how could he play without being able to sprint? Well, he did it. He caught a touchdown. Didn't have to go completely flat out at any point until that ball over his shoulder, which was a perfectly thrown ball to a normal, healthy receiver, a normal, healthy Mike Evans. But he had to turn it on to that fifth gear that you don't always go to. And when he went into that fifth gear, boom, you could see him. He didn't drop the pass. The hammy popped, and the ball hit him, but like he wasn't even at that point really trying to make a play. Like people think, oh, he dropped it, then he pulled his hammy. No. The hammy popped while the ball was in the air, and then he's a lump of uselessness. I'm surprised he even got his hand. I mean, he got his hands up, but I mean, at that point, you're not focused on the ball anymore. So you can question Todd Bowles there a little bit. I know, obviously, there's the whole Godwin fiasco. We're going to talk about that. But Mike Evans, you've got the most important game of the season to date coming up. Not Monday night, but coming up Sunday. And you know that. You've got a guy who's tweaked. And I know it's not that simple. And I know the guy has some say in it. Like Todd Bowles is going to talk to Mike Evans and the wide receivers coach and Liam Coe and the offensive coordinator. Hey, Mike, can you go? And Mike's going to say, yeah, I'm good. Just trust me, I'm good. And he's going to show him that in practice. He's getting by, blah, blah, blah. So I know it's not so simple. But to put him out there, and now you're risking what happened, then he really freaking pulls it. Now he's gone for a month. Whereas if he takes, you know, Monday night off, maybe he gets it healthy enough where he can play and avoid the major pull that ended up happening and play on Sunday. But my point is, that decision can be criticized. You got him out there limping around. And now you lose him for not just the Atlanta game. With Evans, I suppose it could have been worse. But he's going to be gone through the bye. So he misses the next three plus the bye week, which is Atlanta. Then, oh, just the last, you know, year's both Super Bowl teams, the Chiefs and the 49ers. Then a bye. Then we play the Giants, and the schedule lightens up considerably. And hopefully he's back for that, and the Bucs can still chow a little bit. So that's why I'm not down on the season yet. I'm not saying the season's over or anything. But, man, you had the defensive performance. Then you had Mike Evans. And then we get to Chris Godwin. Big controversy about that the past day and a half now with Chris Godwin and the injury thing. And you've probably read and talked about it with your friends and seen and heard so much about it. I'm not going to beat it into the ground at this point. But I'll say this much. It's one I at least see both sides of. I know some people are just all the way on one end. That's coaching malpractice. How can you do that? How can you put your guys at risk in garbage time and now we've lost them for the year? There was no reason. And honestly, I see it. I mean, you could have made a case for pulling Chris Godwin even in early in the third quarter. People talk about win probability. Like, I think the Bucs' win probability was, with like 2 minutes to go in the third quarter, let alone the fourth quarter, under 1%. And then at the point Godwin was in the game, when he got hurt, it was then under 0.5%. Almost negligible. The game was pretty much over the entire fourth quarter. And sure, hindsight's 20/20, and you realize, you know, what are we doing out here? Antoine Winfield Jr. had it happen in week one the other way. We were leading by a lot, but he had it happen then. And so I get the complaints. I do. But on the other, I see the other side of it too. First of all, you have to understand, the NFL is not college with 115 guys on the sideline, okay? Nor should it be. I like the way football rosters don't need to be huge. But the Buccaneers dressed five wide receivers on Monday night. Five. Okay? And we just talked about one of them, Mike Evans, who was already out of the game. So at that point, they had four wide receivers available to them on their sideline as the offense goes to take the field. And they are down. They're throwing. Three of the four are on the... You're running three wide receiver sets. Like, they're three of the four are on the field. The only guy on the sideline at that point was Trey Palmer. You had McMillan in there already. You had Sterling Shepard in there already. And, of course, you had Godwin. So you can't just put in, you know, let's put in all the backups, wholesale changes. No, I mean, there's one guy. You could say, okay, they should have put in Trey Palmer and taken out Chris Godwin. But again, they have only four receivers and three of them have to be on the field. So it's not as if there's a million guys over there just sitting there collecting dust while you continue to stick with guys and put them at risk. Second of all, I know those win probability charts, just like we all see them, they always get posted after the game. Yeah, I'm not saying I thought the Bucs were going to win, but after the Rashad White touchdown, and then we got an onside kick once already, I perked up a little bit. I was thinking, hey, if we can get a quick one here, I mean, I doubt you get two onside kicks in a game, but it's happened. Crazy things have happened, and I'm not ruling it out. So I wasn't thinking, even though it might have said 99.67 chance of the Ravens winning at this point, whatever it said, I understand. And by the way, there was a lot of misinformation going around on Twitter, I know, surprising, right? About the rule about onside kicks. Oh, you can only try two onside kicks, and the Bucs had already done it twice, so they couldn't even do... No, that's false. You can onside kick if you're trailing in the fourth quarter. They don't limit the number you can do. There's limits on the ways you can do things earlier in the game since you have to go into a different formation than what is now the new kickoff rules. But when you are down in the fourth quarter, you can onside kick as many times as you want. That's not a rule. So forget about that for all the people that were screaming about that. So again, I'm not saying there's no chance. I get that side of it too. I see both sides of it. What does kind of frost my ass a little bit, and I'll tell you this much right now, I love how we're so gung-ho, like, oh, there's still a chance, like Todd Bowles, there's still a chance, we're going to fight to the last breath, blah, blah, blah. If you're that desperate to score points at that point in the game when there probably isn't a chance, why the hell weren't you desperate earlier in the game when you're going for it or you're kicking 55-yard field goals on fourth and four in a game you're trailing by multiple scores? They didn't need a field goal there, and it went off the upright. Not mad at Chase McLaughlin at all. He's been unbelievable, and even the one he missed, like he barely misses it. I'm not mad at him. Why the hell are you trying that field goal? Where's the urgency then? That's my problem, okay? You didn't show any urgency another time in the red zone. We kicked a short field goal earlier in the game when I thought we should have gone for it. So, oh, you know, at the end of the game, now we're all balls to the wall, of course. Oh, we can still do this. But when you actually did have a chance, you got real, real meek, okay? And neither of those was the right call. I know some of you guys don't care about analytics, but that's only because you're ignorant. Neither of those was the right call. They should have gone for both of them. They definitely should have gone for the fourth and four. So that pisses me off. Now, we're going to get conservative then, but now that the game's, you know, within a half percent of being completely over, now, oh, to the last breath, men, you know, and then we lose our best guy for the rest of the year and maybe his whole Buccaneer career, although I don't, we'll get to that later, but he's a free agent. Anyway, updating on Chris Godwin, he had surgery or is having surgery today. It's 1:15 right now. I'm not sure what time he's having it. Probably had it this morning as of Wednesday. It is not, I tell you this, the injury he has, and again, easy for me to sit here at my kitchen counter and talk about dislocated ankles and tib fib stuff and all that. The injury he has, you come back from without, you're no worse for the wear. I mean, it's the one Dak Prescott had a couple years ago and he's back now. I would be more, let me say this, I'd be more worried about Chris Godwin if he had done another ACL thing. Like if he tore another ACL or something like that, that'd be really bad. Like that would be really bad. This is bad, obviously, in its own way. And I would never wish it on anybody. But supposedly, from what they're saying, it wasn't that bad before surgery. They went, like, they were able to do the surgery and everything, like, is as good as you could hope for considering the circumstance. So he should be able to come back. Whether that's for the Bucs or anybody else, and I hope whoever it is, I hope it's the Bucs, but even if it's not, I wish him nothing but the best. Although, I have a feeling he'll still be a Buc. But either way, he should be okay from this. This isn't like another ACL thing, because if that happened a second time, that type of thing, I'd be concerned about him going forward. I think he'll be fine this way, from everything I've read from people that know more about this stuff than I do. So that's the update on him. As far as Evans, the update is, now let's really rest it since we pulled the hell out of it instead of just tweaking it, and take a month off, and hopefully he comes back and gets back to normal. In the meantime, nobody on the Bucks defense is going to magically figure it out or heal like an injury. They're going to have to simply get better schematically. I don't think physically they're that bad. They have to get better schematically and figure some things out, because that's an issue right now. Although, again, the pass rush isn't getting any better. They got those two sacks on the opening drive, and I was like, hell yes, we own these guys. We're going to get after these guys all night. It's going to be, yeah, man, we're going to be hammering Lamar Jackson. Woo, he's not going to run around tonight. You know, two sacks on the opening drive, and then total carnage after that. Monken just having his way with Bowles as the Baltimore offensive coordinator. That part isn't necessarily going to get any better. Maybe it will, but it's not going to happen with a genie popping out of the bottle. There are 13 days until the trade deadline in the NFL. Of course, everybody's talking about all the possible wide receiver targets. DeAndre Hopkins just went from the Titans to the Chiefs this morning for a fourth-round pick, which I would do in a heartbeat if I was the Bucks, but that one's by the boards. He's no longer on the table. The Chiefs have him because they need lots of help. And so now you look at some of the other options out there, and the big one is Cooper Kupp. Now, Cooper Kupp, the Rams have come out and made it known that they'd be willing to deal. You know, their season's going south. Kupp is still owed a lot of money, some of which the Rams would be willing to eat, I'm sure. So if the two teams can make this work cap-wise, that's a possibility for the Bucks. They are reportedly, and again, reportedly means they put this out there, because you always ask, you know, it's like, I want $5 million for my house. Okay, well, I'll give you $2 million. Okay, you know, even though my house is worth, you know, six digits. Everybody's going to say they want the most possible thing. They want a second-round pick, they're saying. Now, Kupp also is not like a spring chicken himself, and he's had injury issues, so you're looking to help beef up your receiving core because of injuries with another guy who can't play a whole season most of the time. But he's still very good, and as of right now, he's not hurt. To me, that one comes down to this. And first of all, how much do you really have to give up? I think a second turns into a third. I doubt you can do it for a fourth, but you may be able to do it for a third. Jason Light is really good with his draft picks, doesn't like to give up his draft picks. How serious do you think we are about 2024 right now? That's what it comes down to. If you really think you got a shot at this thing, and when I say this thing, I mean going deep. I think right now, even with the injuries, I think they have a complete and total shot at winning the NFC South. They've got to beat Atlanta. But if they beat Atlanta on Sunday, that's what I'd do. First of all, I would focus on nothing right now except beating Atlanta. If there's going to be a trade, it can happen next week. If you beat Atlanta, then we got some things to talk about. If you lose to Atlanta, now you've given up a one-game lead to them, which is basically two because you've blown the tiebreaker. I'm still punching myself in the nuts at least two or three times a day. Just I'll randomly think about the Thursday night game in Atlanta, and I'll punch myself in the nuts. But you lost that one. If you lose this one Sunday, now you've got the head-to-head drop. Can't have that. So now you got to make up two games on Atlanta and do all this without Evans and Godwin, and maybe you can do it with Kupp. I don't know. But that, to me, is it worth doing? It depends on if you really think this defense, first of all, is going to get better or has the ability to play better, and if you really think you have a team that can compete deep into January. If not, maybe it's not worth it. And I'm not saying give up on the season. I'm just saying don't make a panic move and trade for a wide receiver for a pick that you don't want to give up. That's all I'm saying. But we don't know that stuff yet. So right now, it's just one of those things. And I'll say this much. I think the Bucs offense will be fine. I don't think you can overstate how big of a miss that end zone pick that Baker Mayfield threw was. And I'm not trying to crucify him. It was a bad play. I posted on my Twitter account, if you go at Bobby Game Day, I froze the screen. And again, anybody can freeze the screen and stop all motion and say, oh, look, he's wide open. It's a lot harder when you're in the pocket. I get that. I've never played quarterback in the NFL before. But first of all, man, Bucky is just wide open, just standing there at the goal line, and Mayfield's looking at him. I don't know why. And even the Manning brothers in real time, because I love watching the Manning cast, they go, hit the check down, hit the check. You can see it, like hit him, like he was right there. Mayfield looked him off, didn't throw it. Then, in the corner, the receiver was wide open in the corner where Mayfield eventually threw. He just threw it 2 seconds too late. After Mayfield started to scramble, Bucky came open again. He broke to the back of the end zone after Mayfield didn't throw to him in the front of the end zone. And he was open again. Mayfield missed it. Then Mayfield missed the wide open receiver in the corner and then decided to throw to that receiver once he was no longer wide open and threw the pick. And wow, I mean, you're looking at a 17-7 lead. It was 10-0, then the Ravens got their touchdown, but you come right back down and score and make it 17-7 late in the first half. I don't know what would have happened if we score a touchdown there. The Ravens may still have continued to have their way with the Bucs defense the rest of the night and just pull away for a win anyway. But obviously, it's a completely different game if they get that touchdown. And that wasn't the only mistake Mayfield made, but that was one of the most demoralizing picks you could possibly have there. I remember thinking, I thought we were going to win. Like, I was like, we're going to win. We're going to win tonight. And when he threw that pick, I was like, oh. I mean, just, I mean, the definition of the term wind out of your sails was that pick. But even still, the Bucs offense can do some things. And even without Godwin and Evans, they can do some things. They're going to have to make some adjustments. John Romano wrote a good column about the defense. Rick Stroud, the Bucs beat writer for the Tampa Bay Times, wrote about, here's what the Bucs need to do now offensively to mitigate this loss, or losses, with your two top receivers out. First of all, as far as what you can do on the field, lean more on the running game. I'm never a big fan of that. You still need to throw the ball down the field. But the Bucs, with the three running backs they have, they can run the football. They ran it well. Even Ravens have a good defense, and the Bucs ran the ball well on Monday night with those three guys. You could also use them more as receiving options out of the backfield. Keep working Rashad White in the screen game. I love the touchdown. It didn't matter, but it was the one the very late in the fourth quarter where they flooded everybody right, and then Rashad White leaked out of the backfield, was all alone, dumped it to him, and he ran untouched 30, 40 yards. And there was another couple of times Mayfield was able to find, he hit Bucky Irving on one that Irving was staying in blitz protection. Then the play broke down, Irving leaked out. Mayfield just rolled right and dumped it to him. They picked up a first down, like 12 yards on a play that looked broken. Stuff like that can still be done. Guys have to step up, first of all. I mean, McMillan, he's kind of been in the shadow of Evans and Godwin, so I don't want to say he hasn't done much, but he hasn't done a ton yet. He's made a few nice plays, but a chance to be featured now. I mean, certainly he looks to have the physical abilities. I'm not comparing him to Evans or Godwin at this point in his career, but let's see what he can do with a little more playing time. And Sterling Shepard's been a pretty decent number three, or number four, really. Now he's a number two. And Trey Palmer, none of these guys have been big factors, but that's because the Bucs have relied so heavily on Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. That doesn't mean if you have other people there instead of those two, they can't be relied upon as well. Nobody's trying to say they're as good, but we have guys that can step up. Rakim Jarrett, who got made eligible to be reinstated last week, will probably be the number four receiver. And as of now, Ryan Miller off the practice squad would be the number five. It's not a banner group or anything like that, but they've got some guys. And then, they're going to have to maybe not win shootouts. I mean, I don't know if we're going to be able to put up 30, 40 points tonight. The defense is going to have to be a lot better. But they can beat Atlanta. They can absolutely beat Atlanta on Sunday. And what have I been saying since 2 weeks ago, since they lost that first Atlanta game? I went and made a big circle around it, figuratively, not literally, on my fridge schedule that some of you also have. If there's one got-to-absolutely-positively-got-to-have-it game, it's this Sunday. And that is still in front of the Buccaneers to get done. Bucs are coming off a tough loss on a short week. Falcons played on Sunday, but also a very bad loss to Seattle. Sometimes I worry when one team's coming off of a big emotional win and the other one's coming off of a really bad loss. I feel like there's mean regression there, and the team that's coming off the bad loss is going to win, and the team that's riding. That's what happened with the Bucs-Denver, that week three loss, and the Bucs had come off that Detroit win, and Denver was 0-2 and feeling horrible. They're going to come out. It's going to regress to the mean. They're going to go up. You're going to go back down. So in this case, both teams are coming off of a loss. But honestly, it doesn't. A game like this, it can't matter anyway. You don't have a choice because you let them take control. This is what you earned yourself on the Thursday night loss 2 weeks ago when you gave that game away, and they gave that game away. Okay, when you gave that game away, you gave away the luxury of breathing room. Atlanta's got the luxury now. Atlanta can lose on Sunday, and it's still a dogfight. We don't clinch anything winning on Sunday. But if they win Sunday, they take over a commanding position. I know it's only one game in the standings, but with tiebreakers and things like that, and obviously given the Bucks situation injury-wise, it's a it's a bigger deal to lose for the Bucks than it would be for the Falcons. The Bucks, I hate when people say must win, unless a game really truly is must win where you're late in the year and you're getting down to it. This is only week 8, but this is as close to a must win as they get. And I would have said that even if I did say that even before the Monday night game this past week. If you can get this win, that puts you 2 games above 500, and you've got, like we talked about, Kansas City and San Francisco coming up before the bye. After the bye, though, and I'm not trying to get into specific win-loss, but after the bye, their remaining schedule is at the Giants, who aren't very good, at Carolina, who's bad, versus the Raiders, who aren't very good, at the Chargers, who are so-so, at Dallas, who is so-so, Panthers at home, who are bad, Saints at home, who are pretty bad, at least right now. So, after you get through this 3-game stretch, it's very possible, if not likely, you don't see another team with a winning record again the rest of the season. So that's what I'm saying. All is not lost. But I don't even want to worry about that. This game on Sunday, this is a build a giant little, like, not giant little, build a giant wall around just this week of preparation up until Sunday's game. I don't even care about, oh, we got to go play Kansas City on Monday night or the 49ers or anything after the bye week. Right now, players, coaches, front office people, you and me, the fans, everybody, compartmentalize. I always tell my kids this. One of the biggest things in life you have to do is compartmentalize. Right now, the only thing that matters, like, just get your mind right for those 60 minutes Sunday at 1 p.m. That is everything. Bucks need to win this football game, okay? And if they do, then we're okay. But it's all got to go on Sunday. Like, right now, nothing else matters. I don't even want to think about, we'll talk about the trade deadline, wide receivers. We'll talk about Monday Night Football against the Chiefs. We'll talk about all that stuff. That's later. Right now, not a single thing that the Bucks do between now and Sunday at 1 should be about anything but getting ready for Sunday at 1. Okay? Bucks Falcons, Raymond James Stadium. They're wearing the orange uniforms. I'm going to be there. I decided not to go on Monday night because, quite frankly, I thought the tickets were outrageous. And I resent the whole way they do things now online. Like, a $100 ticket is like $145 with their stupid fees. Like, the fees should be like 10%. But it's like half the price of the damn ticket. And I didn't want to get involved. I'm glad I didn't. It wouldn't have been worth it. But this Sunday, I've been telling my kids for a long time, we're going to go to the game with the orange jerseys. I want you to see what I saw growing up. I don't like the word creamsicle. We've talked about this before. But I still have a little furnace of resentment that always burns inside of me for all the people that made fun of the orange uniforms when in reality they weren't making fun of the orange, they were making fun of the Bucks losing. Because I hate when people tie wins and losses and performance on the field with the uniforms. All that matters is how good of a uniform it is, if it looks good or not. If you go 0-26 in a gorgeous uniform, that's still a better uniform than if you went 26-0 in an ugly uniform. Broncos are guilty of this too. They had the most perfect uniforms ever, changed them to the garbage they had been wearing all throughout the 90s and 2000s. Then they won their Super Bowls in those garbage uniforms. And now, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, well, that, no, I don't care. That doesn't matter. The Orange Crush uniforms, and they wore the throwbacks a couple weeks ago, are perfect, and they should always have stayed with them. Same with these. This is one of the most perfect sports uniforms you will ever see. It's gorgeous. Not just the colors, which I love the colors. I love the way that you look at them and instantly know it's the Bucks. But even the little things, the way the striping ties together, the way the striping on the orange socks matches the sleeves and the helmet stripe matches the white pants. And I mean, it's a beautiful uniform. The Bucko Bruce logo is one of the greatest logos of all time. None of that has to do with any of the futility the Bucks had in their first couple seasons or all throughout the 80s and 90s. The Bucks didn't all of a sudden get good and go to the playoffs for the first time in almost two decades because they changed their uniforms in 1997. And I hate when people insinuate that. And I don't. Creamsicle always used to be a derisive term, and now everybody's like, creamsicle? No, it's just orange. Like, there's different shades of orange. I never even heard the word creamsicle, more than a couple times back in the day when they actually wore these. And now it's become a thing. They're just wearing throwback uniforms, and it's going to be gorgeous. The field, I love the Times New Roman Tampa Bay script in the end zone. I mean, believe me, what have they done this now? This is the fourth or fifth time they've done this, because they did it for a few years, and they stopped because of the one shell rule for the helmets. Now they're back to doing it again. I always have said the thing that they changed to, the red and the pewter, their current uniforms, are really good. I mean, I think the Bucks have some of the best uniforms in the league right now. I think they're a little too in love with their stupid white pants. Like Monday night, they should have worn pewter pants with the red jerseys. The white pants have no place in the uniform program. It should be pewter helmet, pewter pants all the time, then either a red or a white jersey. That's it. It's one of the best looks in the league. So I like their uniforms now, save for that fiasco, the Nike and, you know, whatever the hell they try with that stupid crap during the Jameis era. But even as much as I like their uniforms now, nothing hits like those orange uniforms. And is some of it nostalgia? You know, nostalgia is very powerful, and I'm a sentimental person, so I'm always very nostalgic from stuff from my childhood. Sure, that's part of it, but it's not just part of it. Like, objectively, right now, that's a beautiful sports uniform. And it's going to look great on Sunday. I'm excited. I'd be excited no matter what, but you throw on top of that the fact that this is such an important game. And I know Monday Night Football's the bright lights and national TV and primetime, and everyone got all excited about Lamar Jackson coming to town. It's a marquee matchup, blah, blah, blah. Hey, that was great. But the game that should have more expensive tickets, even though it doesn't, is this one, because this is a big football game. Nothing else matters. Compartmentalize, focus, figure out a way. I don't care what you got to do. It's like Joe Pesci said in Casino. I don't care where you get it. Just go get it. I don't care what you got to do, Bucks. Figure out this thing on Sunday. And you can worry about the receiver, the depth chart, and all that stuff later. Take the 53 that you got right now and go beat these guys, because you have to, okay? So thank you for listening. I want to thank everybody, as always, for taking part. Email me if you want to, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. It's BobbyGameDay, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. On Twitter, same thing, @BobbyGameDay. Thanks to the Joes for giving me this platform on the single best place for Bucks coverage anywhere, TV Internet Radio. You know it, and I always appreciate the chance to get in front of all of you via them. And in the meantime, let's get ourselves right for this weekend, okay? That was a tough one Monday night. You lick the wounds for 24, maybe 48 hours, and you move forward. That's it. We can't dwell. As bad as it was, and it was bad, this Sunday has the potential to make you feel completely different if the Bucks can make it go the way we need it to. I'll be back next week. Hopefully, we'll be talking about a 5-3 football team. In the meantime, wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.